should be.
All right. So good morning, everybody. Welcome to the lunchtime session, I think we could almost call this, using Dynamic Access Control. My name is Adam Hall. I work in the Windows Server and Management team in Redmond and Microsoft Corp. I look after this area from a technical marketing point of view. So I get to sit between engineering, who build these great products and take them out to market. With me on stage is Brian Desmond, who I'll allow to introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Brian Desmond. I am a Microsoft MVP focused on Active Directory based out of Chicago. And I work for a consulting firm called Edgile, where I'm a solution architect focused on implementing both some of the things we're going to talk about today, Dynamic Access Control and RMS, as well as some of the other identity and access products like ADFS and Forefront Identity Manager.
So we're going to spend the first half of the session, I'll go through some slides, explain to people what's actually going on, what Dynamic Access Control is, what you can do with it, and then we're going to spend pretty much the last 60-odd percent of this session in demo. This is a good product to demo in terms of there's lots we can show you. This is a bit echoey, isn't it? Lots we can show you, and it's very easy to understand when you see it in action. So Brian's going to do all the demo from my side. This is the first of two sessions. There is a deeper dive with Matthias. When's your session tomorrow? Is it tomorrow? Tomorrow. So I'll try and keep this at a relatively high level just to give you an understanding. We can go deeper today if you want. But Matthias' session tomorrow is going to go very deep into some of the configurations. So if you've got the deeper questions, there's still an opportunity for you to get that. So let's crack on. We're going to go through what Dynamic Access Control actually is, go through what we mean by claims, the difference between user claims and device claims, content policies, what we mean by that, the ability to do central auditing, which is important when you start to classify and protect information, and then we're going to go through some automated rights management and explain how we do that as well. So the first question I typically get is when I use the term information protection and Dynamic Access Control is like, What is Dynamic Access Control? And I thought I'd start by setting up what it is that we're actually trying to solve here. What is the problem? The problem is that users want to work anywhere, on any device, and from a user perspective, you just expect everything to work. I want my apps, I want my data with me, I don't really care, just let me do my job. IT, on the flip side of that, is tasked with retaining control and making sure that regulatory compliance is met and that all of that sensitive information is still okay. How do I allow users to take data outside of the data center and yet retain control? Do I centralize the data and give them access to it, which is the inverse view of that? How do I make sure that when people move in organizations, maybe from HR into finance. In HR, you might need access to a lot of PII information, personally identifiable information, names, phone numbers, contact details, those kinds of things. But when you leave that part of the organization, should you still have access to that data? Probably not. So how do we cope with that and how do we do it? And really, the information protection scenarios in Windows Server are all about delivering on those things. How do we enable users to work on any device, get their jobs done, but retain control as well? So, Dynamic Access Control, let's go through this. First bit is classification. How do you discover the data that's out there and classify it, tag it, put metadata into it, somehow identify the fact that this is data that we care about? You may not want to classify all of your data. You may only want to classify information of a particular type. And so Dynamic Access Control enables you to scan the content of data, looking for keywords, expressions, whether that's social security numbers, credit cards, strings, maybe it's confidential, if you're looking for words, triggers, whatever they are. Being able to scan content, look for that, and based on what it finds, tag it with some metadata. So, for example, a social security number or a credit card number is a piece of personally identifiable information. From a regulatory compliance point of view, if you store that piece of information, you are legally required to be able to protect that information and be able to audit who has access to it. So how do you find out that someone has stored a credit card piece of data out there? How do you find that information? access control and moving beyond just standard NTFS security in groups. So the fact that I'm in a security group doesn't necessarily mean that I should have access to all files in a given location. It may be that I have access to that location, but I can only access it from a certain type of device. Or maybe I can have access to all the other files, but as soon as it has a trigger word in it or something of that information in it, I don't get access to it. And being able to classify that and being able to centrally do that and set a policy in one location that even if someone takes that document and puts it in a different location, the tagging travels with it, and no matter where the data is, you can still control that access. Auditing and being able to turn auditing on centrally and being able to run reports and find out who actually has access and has exercised that access as well to the information. The forensic analysis from a regulatory compliance point of view, being able to prove what your access policies actually look like and who's had access to that information. And then rights management from an encryption of the data point of view. And we're on a journey here from a product point of view, and you'll hear more of that in the coming months. So let's take a look and see a little bit deeper into each of those. So classification, inheriting classification tags down the folder, being able to tag who the owner are, automatically doing that as well. You don't want to have to run a process that says either every time the user creates a piece of content that they have to tag it manually, because that's never going to happen, or you don't want to have some sort of process to manually do this. You don't want anything manual in this at all. It needs to be automated. Access control, bringing in the conditions of who can access the data and from where and under what circumstances. And when Brian does the demo, you'll see how we classify that data, how we tag it, and then are able to exercise control based on that. Excuse me. Central auditing policies, we just talked about that, being able to prove who had access to it, who actually took access to it, and so on. And then rights management, being able to protect the data as it travels. For those of you that are in the keynote and you saw Brad at the end take the document out of the repository onto a key fob and then be prompted for his credentials, that was rights management doing that. That's an encrypted file that then phones home and proves you have to re-authenticate in order to get access to the containerized document. And being able to do that beyond not just standard office documents, but any document. So let's take a little look at claims and what we mean by claims. So when you think about the data and you think about where people are, you've got locations, you've got the context, and you've got applications coming through. Just going to let this build out. As you build, create content, as you edit it, as you're making changes, you need to be able to classify the document as that changes. I might start with a plain document that has nothing sensitive in it whatsoever. I edit that document and add something to it. How do I then have a classification engine that says, well, that document just went from being something that I don't care about to something that I do? Someone put something in that document, in that piece of content, that now I care about it. And having the content classifier being able to read that document, apply the classification and put it together so that then you can perform actions based on that. And I think that's something that the dynamic access control bit is interesting for me in terms of it's not just about the classification being able to tag it, it's what you do after that. Being able to discover this information is step one, but what are you going to do about it after that? Are you going to change permissions? Are you going to apply conditions to those permissions? Are you going to encrypt it? What are you going to do? So resource claims are built on users and groups, and this is going beyond just I am who I am, and it's taking into account all these different things. So in your environment today, you probably have a user account, you've got groups, you've got permissions to files, and all of these things come together to create the sum total of what you can have access to. If we take all of those properties and these things all come together, you get effectively a token that says, here's your ticket to ride. And when you go to access a file, that ticket is presented, and it is validated to see whether you're allowed to get to your piece of information. That's what happens today. If you're running Active Directory, some kind of domain service, your user account, your machine has this token. And when you go to open a file on a file share, on a SharePoint server, or wherever it might be, you're presenting those credentials, presenting that ticket to see whether you have it. There's a question? Does it work with SID history? Not quite sure I understand where you're going with that question.
So, yeah. Say if you migrated from Vegas to Redmond, and so now you're in Redmond domain, but you still have the SIP history from the Vegas domain on your account. Will RMS work with that?
I think I understand the question.
I'm not quite getting the question.
The picture up here is kind of traditional token when I log in. So I log in and my token has the SID of my user account. It has the SID of the groups I'm in. And when I do a migration between domains, now I have two SIDs plus I have two SIDs for my groups. So that traditional token is the same. When we dive into claims, we're going to see that they don't work off of SIDs at all. So that entire SID history concept doesn't apply at all to claims. Does that help? Perfect.
Thank you. Okay. So, yes, Brian just had the last bit of that slide, which is we're moving beyond using the SID as the way of presenting that and moving to a claim. It's about, okay, so maybe Brian is in the marketing group and in the country US. Taking those attributes and saying, how do we set permissions and make a claim based on the fact that I am in the marketing group and I am based in Redmond? Those are two pieces of information that can come together to create very complex conditions, and we can do that easily. And going beyond just the fact that I'm in a group, but taking into the account of where I am and the attributes of my user account in Active Directory and where my computer account is as well. You can view that. So when you've got this running, if you bring up a PowerShell command or command prompt and run whoami/claims, it will tell you what claims you actually have and list them down. Brian can show you that in demo probably. So if you've got all this additional moving beyond just SID history and moving beyond just the standard users and groups, how do we build all these rules? We don't want to make it too complex, right? So we use expression-based access rules, and they are really quite simple. It's taking into account things like what attributes are in. So we just talked about, and I think in this one it's got finance and high. So if I'm in the finance group and my clearance is high, I might get access or make a claim that says I can get access to a certain set of content. If I have a device that is also in finance and it's a managed device, then we can make additional claims around, well, if I'm on that device and I'm accessing that piece of information, that's two pieces of information coming together, and we need an easy way to do that. And we do that through expressions and being able to build that. It's a very graphical interface, being able to take into account, it's all drop downs, and you can build out what these conditions are. Who is the user? Who is the device? What are they trying to access? And what are the rules and regulations under which you can do that? All of that comes together to build the policy. So, content policies. Here's an example to try and explain this a little bit. So I've got some user folders and I've got some finance folders on the right-hand side there. And we have some business rules around who's allowed to access the information under what scenario. If it's a high business impact document, then we want to make sure that the people that have the access to this are in the right groups, are members of the right teams, and are accessing it from the right devices. And so you can see these business rules are coming across and are being translated from a business requirement, which is you need to be in finance and you need to be on the right machine, to a technical enablement, which is how does that all come together? And so if I let that build out, the access that is allowed is all based on who you are and what claim you're making and the device you're coming from as well. These are supplemental to the security permissions. And when we do the demo, you'll see that the standard permissions are there, but we can apply conditions to the permissions. Very hard to say that, but that's what we do. It's all applied through group policy. So it's centrally managed, it's centrally stored, and it's replicated around in that way. Now, from a workflow point of view, we have the main services. So this is an Active Directory 2012, Windows Server 2012, and the device claims are Windows 8, okay, just to set the context for where we're doing this. There's no down-level client support here. Group policy is used to send the policies around all the file servers. That's how it's applied. The file server has additional extensions. When we turn Dynamic Access Control on, it brings in the additional tabs in file server. You can see them there. And then from the user's computer's point of view, if we're making device claims, it needs to be Windows 8 for that to function. Access denied assistance is pretty cool, and I quite like this one. traditional way, when you go to a file or share and you don't have access, what pops up? This really ugly little, please contact your administrator, you're not allowed, basically. It's a very blunt message. The access denied message allows you to put some nice text in it, and you get a much more graphical box as well, which actually allows you to put other things in there, and they can request assistance. And so you can specify what that does, send in a message, you can put the text in, you could send them off to a portal where they can request access, whatever it might be, you could put links in there. And it's given them a much more rich experience when they're access denied to explain why you have been denied and what they can do about it, rather than just a blunt, no, access denied, please contact your administrator. And so that basically allows you to have all of that traffic going backwards and forwards. All right. Security auditing. Again, this is an Active Directory. It claims coming through, again, group policy, this file server and so on. All of this coming together and being able to audit. If I have a rule set up that says Brian can access this folder from that computer, I want to be able to audit when he does that. And being able to do that centrally and set a policy that is not required to turn auditing on all the individual servers that I've got, but to set a policy to say that auditing is there and bring all that information back centrally. Some examples on the auditing, and this is very expression orientated. Audit everybody who has high security clearance and they try to access a document of high impact. So business level scenarios around your information and who can have access, and then being able to run a rule that says, tell me who's doing this. Right? You've got all this information. How do you filter through all of that auditing data? If you've ever looked at an auditing log, it's kind of like a lot of information. It's very hard to assimilate what's going on. Another example, maybe all vendors when they're trying to access documents that they're not working on. So being able to pick patterns out around, we've got a user out there who's trying to open a lot of documents that they're getting access denied on. It's probably not a good behavioral pattern, right? And so you want to be able to pick that up and find out, who is this person, what are they doing, and why are they trying to access all these documents? It's a bad behavior that you want to pick up on. And as you can see, those are examples of the expressions to write. So very, very easy to write these and very easy to run them as well. Rights management. Is anyone in the room actually running rights management and using it internally? One. Yeah, it's probably about the right percentage that I'd expect. So rights management's been around for a long time, but it has a very low adoption, and some good reasons for that. Around the fact that it's only been Office documents, it only works on Windows platforms, all those kinds of things. No disclosures to make at this point in time, but rest assured we're very aware of that. So the way that rights management works is that you can have it, or traditionally until Dynamic Access Control, this was all user-driven. I created a document and I had to apply the policy. Same for email. If I was going to send an email and I didn't want someone to be able to do something with that, as the user I need to do that. So in Exchange and email now, we can have automated rights management, which is triggering, you can create an email, and if you type certain words and triggers into it, it would automatically encrypt the email and make sure that you couldn't forward it on externally, you couldn't print it, copy, paste, all those kinds of things. Same for documents. It's all based on me as the user manually going and applying rights management. With Dynamic Access Control, and this is what we did in the keynote demo, is we had a rule set up that said if we classify a document and we tag it as being classified with a certain type, then I want to automatically rights protect that document. It contains a piece of information that I don't want to leak out. I don't want someone to be able to take that document and put it somewhere that I don't have control of, regardless of whether it's under Dynamic Access Control or not. And so we encrypt the document with rights management. It puts a wrapper around the file, and it defines what the operating system and the application can do with it. So, for example, you can say you can't print that document, you can't screen dump it, you can't screen scrape it, you can't forward it on, those kinds of things, in both email and Office documents today. And we'll see what that looks like in the demo as well. So that's kind of a background. There's a lot of information there around claims and security and so on, but Brian's going to step you through how this actually works. And light up how we configure this and how it really comes together. So we'll cut across to Brian and do some demo.
Okay. I think before we do that, I just want to see questions that come to folks' mind, you know, things I can spend a little bit more time covering out as we go through the demo. Yeah. Yes. So the question was, traditionally you can audit if someone gets a license from RMS, but you can't necessarily audit if they open the document?
Was that the question?
Yeah.
I don't believe that's changed, has it? No. No, that hasn't changed at this point. Sorry, I'm looking to Mateus as my engineering smart guy over there. Any other questions? Yes?
Ah, yeah, that's a good question. Can you elaborate with what works with what version of Windows? So, yeah, I can take that one too. Yeah, so the really nice thing about this feature is that we don't need a completely native Windows Server 2012 Active Directory. What you need out there is a Windows Server 2012 file server. So the files obviously have to be on a Windows 2012 file server. You need at least one Windows Server 2012 domain controller in the domain that your user's in. Obviously, you would probably want to have more, or all your users would go to one domain controller. Things could go poorly. And then you can use a down-level client because the file server has a mechanism to go out and get the claims on behalf of the client for a down-level client. So a Windows 8 client will go out and get a logon token that has those claims in it. A Windows 7 client has no idea what those claims are. So instead, the file server is smart enough to go on behalf of that Windows 7 client, get a claims aware Kerberos ticket, and let them access a file share on a Windows 2012 file server. So the takeaway there is one Windows 2012 domain controller, one Windows 2012 file server, and you're good to go. If you want to use device claims, which we didn't talk about too much, that does require a Windows 8 client.
Yeah, so the question, it's sort of, I'll try and rephrase the question. So taking a rights managed document, so the screen scraping question, at the moment rights management is a Windows-based operating system client. So you can't open that document anyway. And the operating system is actually the one that's stopping, the operating system client, I should say, is what's stopping the screen scraping. If you can show me a rights managed document being screen scraped by a third party app on a Windows client, I'd like to see that. Sure.
Yeah, I got one in back.
I've never seen that. I wasn't aware that you could even do that. That would be interesting to see. Not seen that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so the questions were yes to Office 365, yes to SharePoint.
That's right. Rights management is integrated with SharePoint and Office 365. The Dynamic Access Control is a Windows Server 2012 file server scenario. So I'm separating Dynamic Access Control and Rights Management in those answers. If you're talking Dynamic Access Control, then that's a Windows file server scenario. SharePoint actually has FCI scenarios, and so you can create tagging and classification of SharePoint at an application level within SharePoint. Rights management works across both.
Can you create policies with SharePoint Entity Manager to provision users to be able to create those policies that they can access through Dynamic Access Control?
So,
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I mean, so Forefront Identity Manager would set the attributes in Active Directory, which in turn would be consumed by Dynamic Access Control.
In a roundabout way, I think you'd get there, but not directly. Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we jump in and do some of the demo? And I bet that'll probably spark some more questions. So we'll kind of keep this going, keep this interactive, and go from there. Okay. So what we've got, just to kind of frame the scenario, I've got a really simple environment that we're going to use for the demo. I've got a single domain controller file server out there, and a Windows 8 client. And I've also got an Active Directory rights management server that we'll take a look at the end. So the first thing I want to tell you is you're probably, or show you, I should say, is you're probably wondering is, where do I even go to configure this? And the answer is something that came in Windows 2008 R2 for Active Directory that many people probably didn't use, but improved quite a bit, the Active Directory Administrative Center. And that's installed on all your Windows 2012 domain controllers. And when you start it up, it looks something like this. Get a home page. Cool thing about this, especially for dynamic access control, not quite sure what to do. It's actually got a bit of a step-by-step guide. If you're trying this for the first time in a lab, if you click through each of these 8 steps that show up on the screen, can walk you through, and you'll be ready to go. Be as it may, the first thing we want to do is set up a couple of claims. And as Adam mentioned, claims are just a projection of the attributes of your user account in Active Directory. So for example, the department that I'm in, maybe I'm in marketing, I'm in operation, I'm in IT, whether I'm a full-time employee or I'm a contractor, something like that, assuming those values are set on the attributes of my account in AD, I can tell AD to make those claims in my logon token. And the way we do this is we go to the dynamic access control node on the left, and we go to claim types, and we can define as many claims as we want. Out of the box, we don't have any. I've gone ahead and set up a couple, but we'll go through one more just to show you how it works. So to do that, we click on New in the Action pane, and we go to Claim Type. And what the picker's going to give us, can I zoom? Maybe not. All right, so what the picker's going to give us on the left is a list of all the attributes in Active Directory that we can choose from to project as claims into someone's token. What I'm going to go ahead and do is project the job title claim out so that we can make a decision based on what someone's title is. Fortunately, you don't have to scroll. We'll just go ahead and select title. And then we can either just put it out there right as is, and then when we go and create our ACL, we can specify any value we want. Or maybe we have a fairly well-known set of values. We want the user, the administrator that's creating that ACL, to be able to pick from a drop-down list. So to do that, we would click on suggested values, and we can populate it with as many options as we want. So perhaps maybe our options are that someone could be a manager. Or perhaps I could be a executive. Executive. Or maybe an individual contributor. And we've got two different options that show up here. We've got value on top and display name. What this does is this abstracts away if maybe you've got your HR system is putting codes in for what all these are. Maybe managers are M and your Active Directory executives are E. That's not really that useful when I go into a UI and I say someone's an M or an E. So why don't I say instead that if they're an M, I really just want to show a manager and then let Windows do the abstraction on the back end. So that's the difference between value and display name. Okay. We go ahead and add that claim type. And what this is doing now is saying that every single time someone logs in addition to the groups they're a member of, their user SID, they're also going to have department, employee type, and their job title in their access token. And we'll show you what that looks like in just a minute. But first what I want to do is, why don't we go ahead and take advantage of these and add an ACL to a share that makes a decision based on this. So I have a couple shares out here, finance and marketing. Same way that you've always set an ACL on a file share before, you right-click and go to Properties. You click Security, get the same UI that you're used to. What's new here is that when we click Advanced, still looks pretty much the same. Let's see if we have zoom in. Still looks pretty much the same. Hopefully Zoom is going to kick in here for a minute so we can blow this up a little bit. But what the change you can make here is before, you know, every time you had a different permutation or combination of folks that wanted to have access to a given resource, you had to go create a new group in Active Directory, you had to populate it. Then this whole process came up with someone calling the help desk, trying to figure out what group they want to be a member of. And then maybe you ran into that problem called token bloat. Anyone's run into that before? So we can solve that here by adding these constraints. So what if I give domain users modify rights to this particular share, and then I constrain it based on those claims I define, so finance, marketing, whatever department I'm in. And bear with me here. So we'll go ahead and do that. So I've got the traditional entry out here called, uh, called finance users. Maybe I want to take that away and really just go based on domain users, so everybody in my domain, but based on those claims I define. So do the same thing we've done before. I'll go ahead and click Add, select a principal, really fancy way to say pick a user or a group. We'll plug in domain users. Got the same basic permissions we're used to here. We've got modify, read, write. We'll go ahead and give them modify. They probably want to be able to do their jobs. But the really cool thing is this new button on the bottom called add a condition. This is where we can take advantage of dynamic access control. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to define a criteria that says, in order to access this file share, I need to be a member of the finance department and a full-time employee, or I can be a manager and an executive. I'm saying that anyone that's a manager and an executive, even if they work in marketing, for example, they still get access to the finance share. Before you think that through, think about how many different groups you would have to define in order to implement that. With this, we can define that all in one place with no groups involved. So I'll click Add a Condition. I'll say that the user's department equals finance. And I'll say, and the user's employee type is full-time employee. But what if they're a manager or an executive? I still need to account for that as well. So I can add a condition. And this time, rather than and, I'm going to go for an or. Say the user's title. Rather than equals, I'll say any of. So any of the ones that we have here is an executive or a manager. Once I go ahead and apply that, I'm saying that anyone that's either an executive or a manager, or they're an FTE that works for the finance department, is going to have access to this share. Okay. And to give you an example of that, we'll log on to my PC as a user called Britta Simon. She happens to be a manager in the marketing department. Go to the desktop, we can open up our share, and what do you know? We've got access to the finance share. Adam mentioned earlier that Who Am I tool, you're wondering what claims you have. If you want to do that, you can open a command prompt, and if you run Who Am I, everybody's used Who Am I before? If you haven't, this is a great tool. It'll show you what groups you're in, it'll show you what NT rights you have, it'll show you what claims you have if you're using dynamic access control. Great way to troubleshoot when you go to file share, double click it, it says access denied. You're wondering why you don't have access to it. Do whoami/claims. And
this is how you do your testing when you're turning this on and doing your lab testing. This command is the one that you can figure out why things are or are not working. If you're not seeing your claims there, they'll never kick through.
And we can see that I've got a couple claims in her token, what employee type she has and what department she's in. And as well as over here on the right, what those values are. So really handy handy troubleshooting tool. Yeah, question in back?
So if you have a bunch of schema attributes when you're
creating a claim, is there any constraint on using custom attributes and/or custom attribute types? So that's a great question. It showed a list of attributes in my Active Directory schema. Could I use custom attributes? You absolutely can. I'm not aware of one. I probably wouldn't publish someone's photograph from the gal, for example, as a claim, but yeah. It does have to reside on a 2012 file server.
Yeah, that's a common FAQ, actually. I should put that one out there. That's, yeah. Oh, question over there,
yeah.
Sorry.
Does it support confidential attributes? Yeah, it should because it's evaluated as Active Directory. Yep.
So you brought up an interesting point about addressing the token quotes.
Uh-huh.
With moving to RMS, are there any best apps to the document for that?
Yeah, so actually that's a great question for the deep dive session. Matthias is telling me right here that he's going to cover it. All right, cool. So next thing I want to do is switch and log in as someone that doesn't have access to this file and walk through how we go about remediating that, how that experience has changed in Windows 2012. So what we're going to do, same thing, I'm just logged in as a different user. Interesting thing here is we talked about that access denied remediation. You've all probably seen this message before. It's entirely useless to an end user, telling them that they're unfortunately out of luck and not going to be doing what they need to do anytime soon. Feedback got heard loud and clear. We can actually now define a custom message that shows up and enable the end user to go ahead and request access via an email. So in order to set that up, that's something that the administrator has to do, take a couple of steps on the back end. We'll walk through what those are. So to do that configuration, we're actually going to use a tool called the File Server Resource Manager. Might have seen that before. And we're going to go through a number of steps here. First thing we're going to have to do is enable an email server so we can send some email. I've already done that. We're going to enable this access denied remediation on the properties of the file server, and we're going to define a custom message and a custom recipient for that access request for the finance folder. So the first thing I'm going to do is right-click on the top and go to Configure Options. Let's see. There we go. And I've already pre-configured an SMTP server up here. You'd have to put one in your environment, probably your Exchange server, but if you don't have Exchange, you could use something else. I'm actually just using the IIS SMTP server.
You had a question? This was a clustered file server. Would you need to do it for each node? I'm going to look at Matthias for that. Yes. We'll answer it in a sec while he's thinking about it.
Yeah.
Once for the cluster? Okay. Once for the cluster.
Okay. Next thing I'm going to do is go to the Access Denied Assistance tab. And out of the box, it's got a handy little message here that tells people to go to the Microsoft support webpage and hope for the best and help themselves. You may want to customize that, or you may feel free to leave the default. What we want to do is check this box on top and then click Configure Email Requests. So come in here. We can check this second box that says enable users to request assistance. If you just check the first box, you get this kind of generic message that says, you know, you're still out of luck, but here's a more custom version of ways you might be able to help yourself. So, for example, you don't know who the owner of every share is. You can just customize that generic message to perhaps send someone to a self-service help desk website or to, like, a group management if you have something like FIM installed where they can go and request access. But if you have a way to classify who owns specific folders and shares, you can come in here and enable people to actually email that person on the fly and ask for assistance. So we'll go ahead and do that. We'll just go ahead and click the default. I'm going to leave everything enabled here, and I'll show you in a minute all the really interesting information that shows up in the email to the administrator. So at this point, we've got this enabled for the server, but we still want to go out and put something useful on the share itself. So to do that, it's buried a little bit. You right-click on the Classification Properties option and click Set Folder Management Properties. I know it was the first place I guessed to go as well. What's that? It's in the new Share Wizard as well. So we're going to set two things, the Access Denied Assistance message. We can specify that for every single folder on the system or a higher level folder, depending on how granular you want to get. I'll browse and find the finance share here. And I have to specify a message. This share is owned by the finance department. If you need access, please click request assistance. And you'll see in a minute that this will get surfaced when I go to access that share again and I don't have access. The second thing I want to do here is define who gets that email to request assistance. And I can do that with the folder owner email option. Same thing, I browse through and figure out where I want to uh, put this where? I'll say the finance folder. And for this one, I'm going to say the finance share owners at contoso.com. You'd probably want to put a distribution list in there. You could also obviously just put someone's email address, whatever worked for you. Okay? So I'm going to go back here and double-click this. We'll have to log out and log back in because that gets cached. Okay, and if I come back to the share, double-click finance, I get a new UI. It says that the share is owned by the finance department. If you need access, please click request assistance. That's what I typed in there. When I click request assistance, this new screen shows up, gives me an opportunity to provide a business justification. So something perhaps I would like to be able to do my job. Click send message. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that I fully understood the question.
So if the folder's not inheriting permissions, what happens? Is that the...
So you're creating a folder under finance, and who doesn't have access? Follows the folder, or are you asking whether the NTFS? I'm still not quite.
Yeah, I think I follow. So it's stored in the same way that the NTFS ACL is. So like it inherits down the tree. So if you drag a new folder in there, it's going to get the permissions the same way as it did before.
Yeah, nothing's changed in the way the permissions are cascading. If that's the question.
What's that?
Yeah, if you move the folder underneath and you don't re-cascade the permissions over the top of it, then these are attributes that will follow it, right? Yeah. It doesn't change. Yeah. The point here is that this does not change the behavior that you know today. It's an additive over the top.
Yeah, so another way to think about it, maybe to simplify it, so you have that traditional NTFS ACL that you're used to. The ACL has a series of ACEs in it, right? So an ACE is an entry. It says that the finance department has modified to this file. Think of the DAC expressions that we put on as a constraint for a specific ACE.
It's like saying you're allowed to go do something, but only if you meet the requirements to do that task, as opposed to a 0-1 scenario. There's shades of gray all the way through. And it's not just a yes-no, it's a yes-but. And then all of what Brian's shown you here are the extra things that make the experience a whole lot better for things like no. How to say no in a much nicer way.
Okay. So that email got sent off. I'm going to show you what a sample of that looks like and all the data that it includes. So the first thing that it comes with, of course, is who's trying to access the given share, where that share is located, and their business justification. They'd very much like to be able to do their job. And then as you scroll along, there's actually a great deal of data that's included in here. First thing it tells you, what access do they actually have and what don't they have? So that's a first troubleshooting step. What do I need to remediate? Some directions to help them fix this. Where should perhaps this is a business owner that owns the share, how do they go and change the permissions on it? If you really don't agree, please reply and politely or not politely tell them to go away. Also, a list of the claims that are included in their tokens, something you can use for troubleshooting. And if they had, if we had compound authentication enabled and we were using device claims, a list of claims that their device was presenting as well. So a fairly detailed email that can go out to the owner of a specific share and enable them to help someone rather than that help desk call that starts with trying to figure out who should even make this decision or who should make this change. Yeah. What's that?
Multiple language support. Is it localized? Is the UX localized? Yeah.
Yes.
So the UX is localized, so in terms of what comes through, and then the message can be typed in whatever language you want. Was that a question? No? Just no scratch. Yeah. Yeah, the language of the file server, yes.
The device claim surfaced in the ADRMS policy?
No. And the device claim is quite a narrow scenario today around it's Windows 8 and it's based on which device you're on. And Brian showed you all those attributes that you can use to tag documents. As with device claims, there is a defined list of things that you can take a look at and make judgment calls on. The one we did in the keynote was very simple. It was just were we domain joined or not. We just had to look at that. They're not surfaced as part of rights management. You can, based on the answer to that, create a rights management policy of if someone creates a document, you could take that into account. But RMS and device claims themselves are not integrated. No. Good question. No? What if a client was not using Kerberos to access the file share? Wouldn't work, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I would expect that if the right group policies are set, there's a Kerberos feature that enables the file share to go file server to go back to AD and get a curb ticket on behalf of the user. It's kind of that same experience if I'm using a down-level client with a file server that expects claims. Yeah.
Yeah, Mateus is going to cover that in the deep dive session, but yeah, basically this is all Kerberos ticket orientated. Without that, it doesn't work. Yes, sorry. Your deep dive session? Tomorrow at 10. Question?
So I think there's nothing stopping the third-party storage vendors from being able to consume these claims, but they have to do the implementation on their end to be able to actually understand that claims data.
We can't implement on their device the ability to do this. It has to come the other way. So we enable it in when you're using the file server locally, but you could only feedback to them that you want to be able to do this on their device because they need to build in to their device the ability to consume this kind of capability.
Okay.
Which they can do.
Sorry.
No.
Okay. Yeah, so just kind of to wrap up that part of the demo before we jump into the second half, is this kind of the takeaways there? We talked about these claims that lets us project those attributes from your account in Active Directory into your security token, so we can make these really complex limitations on ACLs that let you do all those compound expressions with ands and ors, for example. Something that used to take a lot of groups before and a lot of management overhead, potentially something that you can define once and not have to change in the future. And then finally, that access denied assistance. When someone doesn't have access, how do we make it easier for them to get help and make it easier for the data owner to help them? Okay. So the next thing I want to talk about is the classification infrastructure. How can we go out and look at the data that we have on our file shares and apply labels to it? Maybe this is sensitive or confidential. And then how can we integrate ADRMS, rights management services, and protect that data?
Gustavo, did you have a question on the last section? How how do they give access to the user?
Yeah, so how do we grant the exception?
Oh.
And that's a process thing. You could just add them to the ACL, probably not the best practice. Maybe you have an exceptions group in AD that they needed to be added to. Maybe we need to edit the expression, the dynamic access control expression, and make it a little wider open. You know, it becomes more of a business process thing than a technical thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's many different ways to action that, and to be honest, that's where what are your business processes around actually approving that change. So someone wants that, and the answer is, yeah, sure, they can have access, but that's a change control. How do you capture that change, putting them through a mechanism that's going to capture that and go through your process? Depends on what you've got. If you've got an identity management system that they can go to log it and go through an approval process and capture that, that would be a good best practice, I would have thought. It all depends on whether you just want someone to go and edit those properties and just do it, or whether you need change control to capture all of that, which would be normal, I would have thought.
Okay. Cool. So let's why don't we get through this and then keep going with questions as we go on this?
Yeah, sure.
Perfect. All right. So we're going to skip activation. What I want to do, talk about how we can apply those permit or classifications to files. So the example we're going to walk through is, what about if we have a document that has a social security number, a U.S. national ID, something that, at least in my experience, companies are very good at losing. I seem to have a lifetime of free credit monitoring from the number of banks that have mislaid my social security number. Perhaps if we can use RMS to apply a template to those documents that have social security numbers in them, we can make it a little harder to have issues with losing or leaking that data. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go on the file server, back in the file server resource manager. Actually, getting a little ahead of myself. First thing we want to do is create what's called a resource property, another feature of DAC. And resource properties are something that allows us to add global classifications to files and folders. So we do that in the Active Directory Administrative Center. Instead of going to claim types, this time we go to resource properties. Out of the box, we get a whole bunch that are enabled or disabled by default. There's nothing that requires you to use these. We're going to take advantage of one called contains PII, PII being personally identifiable information. My social security number probably is PII. Okay? So I'm going to pick the resource property I want to use. I'm going to click enable. Next thing I can do is going back to the file server resource manager. If I go to this classification properties screen and I hit refresh, that contains PII property that I just enabled shows up here, and it shows up as a global property. It comes from AD. A local property would be something specific to the file server. So what I want to do now is create a classification rule that says, if I find any documents that match that social security number pattern, let's apply that PII tag to it. So now we know that this document has personally identifiable information in it. So to do that, I go to classification rules, and I create a classification rule. And I'm going to give this a name, find social security numbers. Next thing I have to tell Windows is, where should I look for that data? I'm going to look in my finance share. Next thing, how should I classify it? There's a whole bunch of ways, and this is one of those ways that third-party products can plug in. Obviously, Windows doesn't know how to support all different kinds of files or make certain tagging decisions. So this is one of those places where this can be extended. We're just going to use the built-in content classifier, which uses an infrastructure that we'll mention in a minute to actually open all certain kinds of files and see what's inside them. So to do this, I have to define what's called a regular expression. And we'll just leave it at this. If there's a developer in your organization, 99.9% sure, if you come to him and say, I need a regular expression to find me credit card numbers, social security numbers, something like that, he's your man. Type it into your favorite search engine, regular expression for social security numbers, first hit guaranteed. These are all over the internet. So I'm going to plug one in here for socials. And maybe if there's any questions while I'm doing that, Adam can take a couple.
Yes, there is one. The list of available ones? Yep. Ooh, that's a good question.
What was the question?
So the properties that we've got pre-populated in DAC or the PII and stuff, are they computer, where are they stored? Are they attributes of the computer object?
No, they're custom objects.
They're custom objects.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got a social out here. Anything that matches this social, I'm going to tag it as contains PII and set it to yes. Just to give you an idea of what that looks like. And the next thing I want to do is, after I tag it, I really want to apply an RMS template, because I don't really care that much if I know that it has PII in it, but people can still run off with the document. So to do that, I switch over to File Management Tasks, and I'm going to create a new one, and we'll call it Apply RMS to Document with Social Security Numbers.
And what Brian is building here is exactly what we did in the keynote as well. This is exactly what we did to do that demo.
Same thing again. We're going to have to define a scope. We'll say that anything in that share with our files in it. What's my action? I could apply an expiration date. I could do a custom action, run a program, or I could apply RMS encryption. It's going to reach out to my RMS server and find that I happen to have a template called PII data. In RMS, you create these templates, which defines a set of permissions that gets applied to a document or an email, a file, something like that. This one says that people can't forward it, can't print it, that sort of thing. So I've done that, and finally I have to define a condition. When should I apply an RMS template? To a file. So now I'm going to take advantage of the classification rule that I built that adds that PII tag to any document that has a social security number in it, and apply this RMS template. So I click Add. I say contains PII equals yes. Go ahead and click OK. Click OK. Or I should say we should add a schedule and say that this runs all the time. And then in the interest of time, because I know we've all got lunch coming up quite shortly, I'm going to tell this to run continuously in the background so I don't have to wait for it to run. Okay. So what I've done, I've created a classification rule that matches social security number patterns inside documents. I've told it to tag that document as having personally identifiable information in it. And then I've told the file server, anytime you find a file that has that PII tag that we've added, apply an RMS template that can control the rights on this document. So I'm going to switch over to my PC, and I'm going to type up a document here that, I don't know, Adam heard that Contoso has a very good year coming up. Please buy 100 shares. You can find Adam's account under his social security number. We'll go ahead and save this. What's that?
I think you had one too many zeros.
Oh, that, ah, good catch. Good year coming up. Please buy 100 shares. So we'll go ahead and save this on the file share. Order for Adam, we'll call it. We'll close this. And we'll give that a moment to run in the background, and that should match that social security number pattern, apply that contains PII tag, and then apply the RMS template. And while it's doing that, you might be wondering how it does this. I guess Matthias is going to dig into this in his deep dive. Windows has an infrastructure that enables it to support different kinds of files and figure out what's inside there. You install these things called iFilters. I installed the ones for Office. Probably hear more about that that tomorrow. Question? Does it have to be done client-side? It's a server-side component.
Folder redirection.
Yeah.
So the answer, sorry, the, it's a good question. So can we do this client-side? And the answer is yes, we can do it when you use folder redirection, client-side occasion. Yeah. Question? Oh, sorry, I missed that question. Does it use 80 RMS bulk? Does it? Does it use 80 RMS bulk, the tool? No, I think we're using... Yeah, we're using it the straight API.
So to see if this has been applied, you can right-click the file and explore and go to Properties, and then go to the Classifications tab, and you can see that it's gone ahead and added this contains PII tag. and set it to yes. So that was what the file classification infrastructure did while we were talking about a couple of those questions in the background. And if we go ahead and open this up, we should also see that it has a rights management template applied to it.
Yep, there it goes. And so what that's doing is it's scanning the file, looking for the phrases, the expressions that meet the criteria that Brian set in the scan. Once it finds those, it tags the document to say, yes, it contains PII, and then the task is triggered off that. So it's all kind of sequential. Scan the document, tag the document, and then perform the action. Question? How do you manage across multiple servers? So all of this content is stored in Active Directory in group policy. And so when you set the policy, you define. One of the things Brian didn't show you is in the File Server Resource Manager is which servers you're actually managing with it. So you can push it out.
Can you script that? Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. And so we open this up. You can see that the PII data template has been applied in the upper left. And that this document contains personally identifiable information.
So there is a hands-on lab if you want to do this. It's called Enabling Remote Users, and it's got dynamic access control. There's four sections to the lab. The fourth lab, you can jump straight to it. It's not sequential, and it actually takes you through enabling this and running it on the file server, installing the parameters, all those kind of things. It's all in there step by step. Even if you take the lab and just save the document locally so you can take it home, it gives you all of the steps. And in TechNet, there are scenario guides of how to do this end-to-end. We built this, Brian built his own one, but the demo I did in the keynote was based all off the TechNet documentation. We just went through it line by line and made sure that it was reproducible. Oh, sorry, Christian, go there. Does it work on cached and offline files? So if the client is disconnected from the network? That's a good question. Yeah, so it's a server-side functionality. When it comes back online, it'll trigger it. But if the client is completely offline, then it's not going to happen until it connects back. The next time the client syncs, the file will hit the server, and then all the triggers will happen, and then when it syncs back down. So if it's created offline, and then it syncs up to the server, as soon as it hits the server, all of this kicks in. But it's not going to do it at the client side. Oh, so if he pulls it down and then we apply a new policy? Yes, because then when the document syncs back up, it will be seen by the server as a new document. And if you've got it running, and unless you've got it set to manual only and you never run it again. But so long as you've got it polling on either a regular schedule or you've got it continuously running, the answer will be yes. Question? This is a rights managed document that you're talking about? So the answer is yes. Now, you can also configure, one of the things you can do in rights management that we did in the keynote is you can tick a box in the rights management template which says user must be connected. And effectively what that says is if you want to open the document, you have to phone home every time you open the document. So for super secret documents or secure documents, you can force the re-authentication of the user every time. So if you want that, I mean, you might not want them, they might get annoyed with you if you start doing that too much, but if it's that level of confidentiality that you require a connection back, it stops. Otherwise, what happens is the first time you open the document, it caches the credentials in the client for that document, and so therefore the next time you open it, you don't have to re-authenticate, but if you tick that box, it's going to phone back every single time. Yeah. Good question. All right. You done?
I'm done.
All right. So I think there was one more thing I was going to cover. Did you cover everything? No, I think you did. All right. So what do we got? Let me just re-authenticate here. I think you actually covered everything.
What's that?
No, sorry. I thought I was going to cover one more thing, but I think Brian actually did a great job of covering everything. So we've got 10 minutes left if there's any more questions, but we'll just quickly wrap here. I think the demo really showed that this is about finding the content, tagging it, classifying it, and then performing actions based on that. There are some restrictions around platforms. There are some restrictions on what functionality at what levels. But from a strategic point of view and from a vision point of view, we intend to light this up in more places. Rights management was enabled for Office 365. So when you turn rights management on in the Office 365 admin center, that is going back to Windows Azure AD. So Windows Azure AD is aware of rights management, and there's a service running on Azure that lets you do that. And we have a vision of broadening that to more platforms and wider environments as well. Dan Plastina, who's in our engineering team, has a blog on Channel 9. And if this is an area that you're interested in, I'd recommend you go take a watch of. He's posted some blogs and some videos and some demo of some futures, and he's got some demos of what they're building around rights management in this area that's posted up there on the public site. So go and check out Channel 9, Dan Plastina, and watch those if this is an area, because he's really given a good vision about how we see this area move from where we are in market today to the next versions coming down. And with that, I thank you. Thank you very much for coming in. It is lunchtime, and we're standing between you and a sandwich, so thank you very much. We'll stay up here for a few minutes if you've got any more questions.
Thank you.